From the Atlantic to the Pacific, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from the canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's a place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Vance Pollock, in the captain's seat for Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and most intriguing guests, and that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here. This hour, I would like to tell a story. It's going to get a little academic at times, but I think the content is deserving of discussion. You probably know H.P. Lovecraft. You probably know The Call of Cthulhu. You probably know some of the dark horrors contained in the Necronomicon, if you're a horror fan. H.P. Lovecraft, undeniably one of the most relevant horror authors of the first half of the 20th century, although in his time, he never had a book properly published. Most of his stories ran in the pulp magazines, Weird Tales. They were, in those days, a cult taste, and they still are, for that matter. But the cult of Cthulhu has grown and grown. Well, this hour we're going to ponder the significance of our childhood friends, or lifelong friends. When you take someone of the stature, the magnitude, as a horror writer of H.P. Lovecraft, and you find that his closest friend, and he was kind of a reclusive sort, even as a child, he didn't get on with the other children quite so well because he wasn't interested in the same things as most of the other children. Maybe you've been there. But one of his few childhood friends, and the friendship that maintained until his death, was a fellow from Providence, Rhode Island, as was H.P. Lovecraft, Chester Pierce Munroe. Turns out that Chester Pierce Munroe, in his early 20s, moved to Asheville, North Carolina, and was a clerk at the Grove Park Inn. He married here. He had a family, two lovely children, and soon separated from his wife and was estranged from his children. It all gets more tragic when we learn that his son, Chester Jr., called Ted, had joined the Army. He was in the Army Air Corps. He was a sergeant. He was a bright young man. He went out to flight school in Colorado, and he was on a B-24 bomber training mission in 1943 when the plane crashed and killed all 10 men on board. Young Ted's body was returned to Asheville and is buried out at Riverside Cemetery. Sadly, and perhaps to explain how estranged Chester Munroe was from his wife Doris, the death notice does not even mention the father. It's kind of sad, really. Later that year, actually within a couple weeks of Christmas, Chester Pierce Munroe Sr., H.P. Lovecraft's friend, died in Taunton, Massachusetts. He was about 54 years old, and I don't know the particulars or his cause of death, but being that he had lost his son just a few months previous and was separated from his wife, it was a bad time for him. And I don't want to say conclusively, like I say, because I don't know, but it seems like a scenario for suicide. So anyway, Chester Pierce Monroe shared more than just a friendship with H.P. Lovecraft. They shared so many like interests, that of amateur journalism. Yes, in the days before the blogosphere, in the days before zine culture, even, H.P. Lovecraft and some of his friends were self-publishers. They would write and collect writings of friends and print these in small press runs, mimeograph, very amateurish-looking journals that they would just share for each other just for the novelty, or perhaps just because the content was a little bit strange for popular tastes. And as early as 1905, when Lovecraft was but 14 years old, he started publishing the Rhode Island Journal of Astronomy. And advertisements in the Rhode Island Journal of Astronomy for a musical group called the Blackstone Orchestra, featuring C.P. Monroe, and fine music cheap. So he and his friend Chester Pierce Monroe had a high school rock band. Well, in 1905, the closest thing to a rock band, I suppose. Lovecraft said he played Zobo. A lot of people have no inkling of H.P. Lovecraft's teenage musical experiences, but Chester Pierce Monroe certainly right in on that bandwagon with him. It's fascinating to look back at the Lovecraft Asheville connection. How it all came to me, probably from a footnote in S.T. Joshi's biography, H.P. Lovecraft: A Life. S.T. Joshi, for H.P. Lovecraft fans, they'll recognize that name. He's the foremost scholar and editor of H.P. Lovecraft's works in the modern era, and his biography is incredible. I mean, the detail and the fascinating figure it paints of this man, this peculiar fellow, H.P. Lovecraft, is one of the things that has kept me interested in him. Outside of his own works, a lot of people will read short stories by H.P. Lovecraft, say they're a fan, and know very little about the man. But thanks to S.T. Joshi and others, we can paint a very fascinating picture of a man with a ravenous appetite for information and fascination with the sciences. And certainly these interests fed the development of his cosmic horror and the Cthulhu pantheon, the Necronomicon. Reading in the footnotes to S.T. Joshi's bio, I find that in 1915, H.P. Lovecraft was writing an astronomy column for the Asheville Gazette News. A double take on my part. I'm here in Asheville reading about H.P. Lovecraft writing his first published astronomy column in a daily paper for the Asheville Gazette News. Perhaps most relevant about that column, says S.T. Joshi, is that he inadvertently, perhaps, had miscited an early astronomical work known as the Astronomica as the Astronomicon. In 1915, some 5 years before the Cthulhu mythos, before the Necronomicon, H.P. Lovecraft makes that Freudian slip and calls this astronomical work the Astronomicon. Of course, people will tell you the Necronomicon is the Book of the Dead or the Book of Dead Names, and that it's based on actual forbidden texts, very rare texts. Of course, that all feeds into the cosmic horror of H.P. Lovecraft, the mystery, the fact that there are dark things out there. And there have been so many books and so many movies that borrow this theme of unnameable, unspeakable horror. Well, the original name of the Necronomicon, according to Lovecraft, was Al-Azif, and that's a Arabian word describing mysterious sounds heard in the desert at night, thought by superstitious persons to be the voice of the jinn or demons in the desert. Other people said that Al-Azif, the voices in the desert, were the sounds of night insects, locusts. At the time I was reading about Abdul Al-Hazred and the Al-Azif, it was when the seven-year locusts were out last. And man, they were causing this weird whir of noise that was is very strange, almost like a person on each side of you whistling so that the sound waves distort, and has almost another dimensional sound to it. So I'm finding out about the Al-Azif and the Necronomicon and this Asheville connection to the Astronomicon. I had to find out why H.P. Lovecraft is writing for an Asheville newspaper, and I soon found out about Chester Pierce Monroe and the fact that his wife's grandparents, who they were rooming with, lived next door to Walter Hildebrand, the publisher of the Asheville Gazette News. Certainly no coincidence there. Chester Pierce Monroe had pitched his childhood friend H.P. Lovecraft's astronomy writings to the editor of the Asheville Gazette News, and thereby accounts for one of the early popular published writings of H.P. Lovecraft, the man so widely known as the master of horror by millions today. Fascinating to read that Addison Monroe, Chester's father, came to Asheville and spent time at the Grove Park Inn with his son. Later years after Lovecraft and Chester were dead and gone, and Lovecraft had come into vogue, someone interviewed Addison. I've got the photograph of Chester and Addison on the porch at the Grove Park Inn, but he writes this about H.P. Lovecraft. "He lived but a few houses distant from our own home and was quite frequently over here with our sons. I remember that we had a room fixed up in our basement for the boys to use as a club room, which was a popular place with Howard." That's H.P. Lovecraft. "The club, so-called, consisted of about a half dozen of the neighborhood boys around 20 years of age, and when they had a so-called banquet, improvised and usually self-cooked, Howard was always the speaker of the evening, and my boys always said he delivered addresses that were gems." More about Chester Pierce Monroe of Asheville and his lifelong friend, H.P. Lovecraft, when we come back from the break. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.
Spooky little girl like you. Spooky.
Welcome back to Speaking of Strange. Joshua P. Warren, Speaking of Strange. I'm Vance Pollock in the driver's seat this week, trying to take you down one of my research roads that can get a little dry, but I think the information will stick with you. At least you'll be able to drop the trivia on people that, did you know H.P. Lovecraft's best friend lived right here in Asheville, raised a family right here in Asheville? Well, at least until he and his wife separated. Kind of tragic, actually, but I've just got a couple items here. I think if we're going to talk about H.P. Lovecraft and just how important this friendship with Chester Pierce Monroe of Asheville was, we should hear it in H.P. Lovecraft's own words. So I've got here a page from the first issue. This is volume one, number one of H.P. Lovecraft's self-published journal from April 1915. The Conservative was the name of his magazine, and he, as the editor, played the role of the Conservative. So you'll catch that. He writes this introductory article about his friend Chester Pierce Monroe, introducing Mr. Chester Pierce Monroe. And I'm going to try and do an imitation of how I've heard H.P. Lovecraft's voice described. There does not exist a recording of H.P. Lovecraft's voice. There did at one time, in conjunction with those previous high school band projects that I was talking about. He said they had recorded on an Edison blank around 1905. He and his friends singing some songs, and his mother loved those recordings, but he said mothers sometimes aren't the most honest critics, but he found a way to be sure that those recordings were destroyed because he was not all that proud of them. So there at one point we had H.P. Lovecraft's voice recorded, but people say that it had kind of a pitchy nasal quality. So, and being a man from Providence, Rhode Island, this is how I do H.P. Lovecraft. So if you don't like it, bear with me. Visitors at the Slater Avenue Primary and Grammar School in Providence, examining the desks and walls of the building or the fence and the long bench in the boys' yard, may today discern among the multitude of names unlawfully carved by generations of youthful irrepressibles, frequent repetitions of the initials CPM and HPL, with the vicissitudes of 16 years, have failed completely to efface. The two friends, whose initials are thus early associated, have not been separated in spirit during the ensuing years, so that HPL now become the Conservative. Herewith takes pleasure in welcoming to the United as his first recruit, Mr. Chester Pierce Monroe, the CPM of boyhood days. But while the Conservative has remained in the city of his birth, secluding himself amidst the musty volumes of his library, his friend has been in and of the busy world outside, acquiring a knowledge of men and things instead of mere bookish lore. Wherefore, it is no dry replica of himself that the Conservative is ushering into the charmed circle of amateur journalism. Chester P. Monroe was always of literary tastes, even in the old Slater Avenue school days. He used to write short stories in moments snatched from the study of his regular lessons, and in later years he became the author of more than one unpublished novel. His geographical description of Switzerland, composed a few years ago, inspired the Conservative to scribble off some complimentary verses which may one day appear in the amateur press. Recently, Mr. Monroe has become a disciple of the Muses, and his credential to the United, a delightful little poem called Thoughts, will soon, it is hoped, greet us from the pages of amateur journalism. The new member is now a thorough North Carolinian, having established himself at the Grove Park in Asheville. It is therefore possible that he may attend the coming convention in that state later this year. In the future politics of the United, Mr. Monroe may play a lively and considerable part, for he comes of a decidedly political stock. His talented father, the Honorable Addison Pierce Monroe, has repeatedly been elected by overwhelming majorities to the Senate of Rhode Island. His uncle, Mr. Oliver Munro, is mayor of Melrose, Massachusetts, while his charming younger brother, Harold, is a deputy sheriff of Providence County. The conservative is certain that the rest of the amateurs will join with him in making this promising recruit feel at home in the ranks of the United Amateur Press Association. A bit dry, I know, but there you have H.P. Lovecraft's endorsement of his friend Chester Pierce Munroe of Asheville. I mentioned I had a photograph of Addison, his father, on a visit here with his son at the Grove Park Inn, and there enters my own sort of personal synchronicity with this case. Of course, I would have been obsessed enough with it, and dry as dust suits me just fine, but when I stumbled across this photograph of Addison Munroe and his son Chester, who was a clerk at the Grove Park Inn, it was in the collection at UNCA, and it was labeled from the Doris Munroe collection. And I already knew at that time that his wife had been dead for some 20 years. She was widowed for almost 50. But here's a photograph of her late husband and his father. And there were no known photographs, no published photographs of Lovecraft's friend Chester Pierce Munroe, but I run across one at UNCA in their collection. And in those days, 2010, I wrote a blog on MySpace about it. And it was read and appreciated by dozens, half a dozen or so friends maybe got wind of it. And I sent the emailed the story around to a few obsessive types. But I wrote to UNCA. I said, are there more things from the Doris Munroe collection? What's going on here? And they wrote back and said, no, just a couple of photographs. There was another photograph of him with his mother also taken at Grove Park Inn about 1915 or so. So imagine my surprise just a few months later when I'm looking around the online catalog for Pack Memorial Library. They have a great local history collection there that I can't brag enough about. It's the North Carolina room at Pack Library. At that time, they were remodeling, and they were working out of the old Tractor Supply Company over on Tunnel Road. But here's the thing. They had some newly added photographs, and I wasn't looking for information on Chester Pierce Munroe or H.P. Lovecraft in the local Asheville digital library at that time, but I found a photograph of the old train depot down on Depot Street before the 1916 flood, and it said from the Doris Munroe collection. I said, wait a second, the Doris Munroe collection. There are two photographs at UNCA, the only ones I know, representing a collection. And here's Pack Library with a newly published photograph that they attribute to her. Well, I contacted Zoe. She's wonderful. She's the reference librarian in the North Carolina room. And I said, hey, this Doris Munroe collection, tell me a little something about this. And here's the story, and here's where it gets a little too coincidental. She says a lady came into their temporary digs over at the Tractor Supply, old Tractor Supply store, with several boxes of papers and photographs. And it was this: my mother has had these papers for 20 years that she got from her neighbor when she passed away, because she didn't have any friends or family. My mother thought they must be important enough that my mother has hung on to them for 20 years. My mother just passed away. I'm cleaning out her house. I can't throw this stuff away. I'm bringing them down here to donate them to Pack Library. They were the Doris Munroe papers, and they included letters and photographs and scrapbooks and information on Chester Pierce Munroe, boyhood photographs of him taken in Providence, Rhode Island, when he was a small boy. And they had been languishing in this elderly woman's hands for 20 some years after Doris Munroe died. And between the time that I found out that Doris Munroe had those two photos at UNCA and this old woman died, all of a sudden a wave of information falls into the hands of Pack Library. And who would have cared about any of that stuff except yours truly? I'll dig into it and try and impress upon you how significant this is when we continue after the break. You're listening to Speaking of Strange, going a little Lovecraftian. Speaking of Strange, keeping you company on a Saturday night here in Asheville and around the world on the internet. Oh my goodness, we're deep into the friendship of H.P. Lovecraft, the horror maestro, and Chester Pierce Monroe of Asheville. I don't know that they called him Chet, but I like to refer to him as Chet. In some of his wife's papers that I mentioned had just kind of fallen into the hands of the PAC Library when seemingly no one would have cared and avoided the dumpster. You know, it was the daughter of this woman's decision when she was cleaning her mother's house out. Here's some old papers that the old lady next door gave my mom 20 years ago, and my mom, the pack rat, held on to these for some reason. She could have just as easily thrown them in the dumpster, but she took them to PAC Library. And when I got down there to mine these belongings, there were, like I say, old school photos and childhood photos of Chet and his brother Harold. Harold, also a good friend of Lovecraft. Lovecraft mentions his charming brother Harold in that introduction I read. Yeah, these guys were tight, and they had a lot of shared interest in non-mainstream literature, which in Lovecraft's case, at least, would evolve into a horror phenomenon that is imitated by so many people and borrowed, as, like I say, for the basis of so many films and things like that. There's another little theory that's a bit of a stretch on my part, but I want to open up the mics to Shelley and Sam and just pose this question. First, Sam, you know what a Mickey mitt is? Mickey Mouse's hand, Mickey Mouse's glove.
Mm-hmm.
What's characteristic about, I mean, the other than the fact that it's only got three fingers.
Three fingers and a thumb.
When you imagine Mickey Mouse's white glove, what else is characteristic about that?
I guess it's got a couple black lines down it. It's oversized.
Well, that the black lines is what I was fishing for. White gloves with black stripes down the back. You would think maybe
stripes,
that was some. Well,
I mean,
right.
Like the
maybe the
them.
Seams on yeah. the outside are dyed black or stitch. Yeah. Maybe the stitch down the back. But anyway, the Mickey mitts, as they are trademarked, have those black stripes, and we know that. Walt Disney was rumored to have been in Asheville.
Really?
Yeah, mm-hmm. In the early 1920s. the same time that Chester Pierce Monroe was here. But a while back, I got to looking at the Mickey Mitts as a clue to was Disney here, because they said that there were Mickey Mouse hands on some of these old plats that he had drawn in the courthouse. I found out that in 1924, when he was allegedly in Asheville, he had already developed a character called Oswald Rabbit, but Oswald never wore gloves. And for the first three or four shorts, Mickey Mouse didn't wear gloves.
In the original Mickey Mouse
appearances, he just had black hands. The white gloves came later.
Mickey didn't have the gloves, did he?
I don't know if Steamboat had the gloves yet, but early appearances of Mickey Mouse, which would have put Walt way outside the range of his alleged appearance in Asheville. Anyway, no white gloves. That all came later. But I got to thinking, were the white gloves with the black seams on the back, was that kind of a fashion thing? And I got to looking around. You know, I could not find, and I'm pretty savvy with Googling, I could not find one picture of human beings wearing white gloves with black stripes except Chester Pierce Monroe when he was in Asheville. I want you to take a look at this photograph in the interest of this discussion. Now, this is sort of a curve, because I have a picture of Chester and his father at Grove Park Inn, and he's wearing the white driving gloves, smoking a cigar, and they've got the black seams on the back. You would think that they were more common than that. As a matter of fact, I did find some examples of these white gloves with the black seams on the back old catalogs and stuff, but you would think they would show up in more photographs. And once I started looking, I could find none. Now, in this case, it's the woman in this couple that is wearing the gloves, but take a look at that, Shelley. You'll see there's a woman, and she's kind of clowning. She's got her head on the man's shoulder and her eyes rolled back, but she's got the gloves with the black stripes on the back. Do you know who that is sitting with that woman? Who does it resemble that is a part of this conversation here?
See, I'm going to say Walt Disney.
That's who I want. That's who I was fishing for. That's who I wanted. That's who I wanted Shelley to say, that looked like a young Walt Disney. That's Chester Pierce Monroe.
No way.
He is a Walt Disney doppelganger from that same age. I pulled photographs of Walt Disney that were taken in the early 20s when he was supposed to be in Asheville, and he looked identical to Chester Pierce Monroe, H.P. Lovecraft's friend. And Chester Pierce Monroe was roaming around Asheville at the time wearing white gloves with black stripes down the back. How possible would it be that people who observe this would confuse this doppelganger, H.P. Lovecraft's friend, with Walt Disney? Anyway, that's my stretch, but I'm sticking to that story. I think that Chester Pierce Monroe is Walt Disney in Asheville.
I think you're onto something.
So you don't think that Walt was here in Asheville?
No. Joshua P. Warren and I have demystified those claims. There's no doubt that he was not. He was in other places. There were telegrams coming from Kansas City and California, all covering the period that he was supposedly here. This is a transformation that he made within just a few years. Here's Chester Pierce Monroe. I'll post these photos around on like the Speaking of Strange Facebook page and everything, so you people can see H.P. Lovecraft's friend Chester Pierce Monroe while he was here in Asheville. This is, say, 1915 or so, and this is circa early 20s. He's changed a bit. He's turned into Walt Disney. That photograph looks like a young Walt Disney. Yes. The mustache, of course, helps, but the facial features, the ears and everything. I put a photograph of Walt Disney at the same age next to that, and you could tell anybody that that's the same man, and they would believe you.
Just if you wanted to know, the first appearance of the gloves on Mickey was in 1928 in Galloping Gaucho.
28.
Well. And then Steamboat Willie was also that same year. They kept it on. They said that they wanted him to have some human characteristics, but five fingers looked a bit much. So they took one away.
Well, 1928, well outside the supposed scope of Disney's time here in Asheville, which was 1924.
Those gloves are very much Mickey-esque, though.
Yes, Mickey Mitts. Like I say, they trademarked them. Guys, can I read some poetry? We're kind of highbrow around here.
Do it.
Twilight. The ruddy sun his garish luster shed, with milder radiance lights the vesper scene. Big looming o'er his hilly western bed, he beams a benediction on the green. 'Tis then my spirit sweetest comfort knows, then that my heart has respite from its pain. Those cares are softened at the day's glad close that burned when noon's hot ardor parched the main. Yon purple peaks and lines of darkening hills, an equal peace at touch of evening own, departing Phoebus with affection thrills, and soothes the heights he soon must leave alone. Adown the valley and across the mead, the welcome shades of gentle dusk unfold, the lullabies of brook and crooning reed, my weary thoughts in dreamy rapture hold. In vaporous bower, just o'er the horizon's edge, the sun and sky enjoy a last embrace, recounting each, with many a solemn pledge, fair deeds performed to light the world with grace. Then falls the blessed boon of eventide, the freshening dew a drooping earth restores, the loveliest moments with the shadows glide, the mortal soul in loftiest ether soars. Now may fond retrospection reign supreme, dear memories surge amid the fading light, till the first star's uncertain twinkling beam leads on the numbered glories of the night. Chester Pierce Munroe, 1916, as published in H.P. Lovecraft's journal, The Conservative. This morning, Shelley and I, earlier this week, Shelley and I met up over at Riverside Cemetery, and I showed her a lonely little grave beneath a tree across the road and down the hill from the more prominent Thomas Wolfe grave that everybody goes to see. Actually, it's on the same ridge below Governor Locke Craig's grave. That's a good way to spot it. But there's a little bench there under a tree, and there's that flat military stone for Chester Pierce, called Ted Munroe Jr., a mere 2 weeks after his 22nd birthday, had died in that B-24 bomber training flight out in Colorado. And I didn't show you a picture of Ted, but I asked you to be thinking about Ted, and I asked Ted to help us tell his father's story well, and that it would reach the people who would appreciate it. There's young Ted, Shelley. Good looking kid.
He was a good looking kid.
With a promising life ahead of him.
It's funny how, like, back then people looked a lot older. You said he was 22 when he passed away?
Yeah.
He looks like he's in his late 30s. Or, like, at least early 30s. People looked older back then. More, like, mature.
Maybe. Life started a lot earlier for people. They had to become men a lot earlier, especially during the war, man. We'll wrap up with Chester Pierce Munroe and H.P. Lovecraft when we continue with Speaking of Strange. And yes, the final hour is coming up right after this segment. We're going to wrap things up with H.P. Lovecraft, particularly his friend Chester Pierce Munroe, who was here in Asheville doing some writing and mutual publishing with H.P. Lovecraft. The whole synchronicity of Zoe from Pack Library getting that donation of boxes and boxes of materials, it's she'll admit that it was rather peculiar that I contacted her and I knew those papers and I was looking for those papers. When I had published that first article on my MySpace blog, that was in March 2010, I believe, and I said, if the Doris Munro papers exist, I'm very close to finding them. And a few months later, they just came out of left field. I thought they were out at UNCA. I thought UNCA already had them based on these two photos that she had donated to UNCA while she was still living. But in the next couple of months, her papers that had just been in some little old lady's house for all those years came to light. And fascinating stuff. More on the Chester Pierce Munro synchronicity, the fact that I feel like Chet appreciates us looking at his life and revering him, not only because he was H.P. Lovecraft's best friend. We all had a lot of friends when we were in school that don't necessarily reflect our same qualities, values, things like that. But the fact that Chester Munro was an influence on H.P. Lovecraft writing for a more popular audience, publishing in the daily paper here, a column running in the daily paper. Imagine an astronomy column in the Asheville Daily in 1915. That's kind of highbrow. And it's called Mysteries of the Heavens by H.P. Lovecraft. You show that headline to people and they're like, what? H.P. Lovecraft's writing for your daily paper? Yeah, true. But I think Chet appreciates me sharing his story with you folks tonight, and I hope some of you appreciated it and will bear that in mind. Like I say, a trivia, if nothing else, my hour of exposition boils down to your 10 seconds of trivia, but here's the final clincher. Just last year, someone brought to my attention a snapshot of Lovecraft in Florida, an unpublished snapshot that a friend of theirs, a collector, had, and I got in touch with the guy. He's an artist and illustrator out in Seattle, Washington, and I said, man, I would love to get a print of that H.P. Lovecraft when he was staying in Florida, because it wasn't just like him on Miami Beach or in Daytona or whatever. He was staying in a cabin out in the swamps about 40 miles up a back road from where I grew up. He's spending months late in life staying with a family out there in the swamps in Central Florida. Knowing that area so well, it's between Eustis and Mount Dora, a little village called Cassia, Florida.
That's backwoods, all right.
Yeah, certainly is. But anyway, he's got a picture of him sitting out by this cypress-logged cabin in 1934 or so. I got in touch with a guy, and we started chatting Lovecraft, and he said, you know, I do have a couple original manuscript items that I've bought over the years. Only one that is a handwritten, initialed H.P. Lovecraft manuscript, and it's an unpublished poem. And he photographed it. He had it hanging on a frame, in a frame on his wall in Seattle, Washington. He photographed it and sent it to me, and it was a poem entitled To My Friend Chester Pierce Munro. And I wrote back to him and I said, if I could have one piece of Lovecraft ephemera, it would be that, because Chester Pierce Munro lived right here in Asheville, and I feel a connection to the guy. I spoke with his nephew, who described his Uncle Chet as more of a sport than my dad. He said his father, Harold Munro, was the one that had to stay home and work and take care of their aging parents, while Chester was more of a sport. He's the one that would come to visit, and Uncle Chester would take him out for a ride in his convertible roadster, buy him a pint of ice cream, and park by the curb and go into the bar room for an hour or so and leave his young nephew sitting out in the convertible with a pint of ice cream. So, yeah, he loved Uncle Chet, but he was more of a sport. Well, his sport came to an end in 1946, and all these years later, he's remembered by some no one left to mourn him, but he certainly left his mark, and I have a feeling we'll hear more from him. H.P. Lovecraft himself passed away of intestinal cancer in 1937. So
where was that?
Providence, Rhode Island. He did travel, though. People don't realize that he loved the South. He loved Charleston, South Carolina. He wrote travelogues about Charleston, South Carolina that are kind of macabre, dark travelogues. Of course, Edgar Allan Poe had connections to Charleston. Lovecraft loved St. Augustine because it was a very old city. Lovecraft was really fascinated with antiquarian things, things that were so old they were mysterious. That's why a lot of his stories feature these prehistoric civilizations and intelligences that are beyond age. The unnameable horror of H.P. Lovecraft. And that's the Asheville Connection. Chester Pierce Monroe, thanks for letting us share your story with listeners of Speaking of Strange. Hey, my.